I tell you, it's simply wonderful, the communication that we have these days. Now, during the Feast of Tabernacles, I was able to speak to you on the opening day, and again on the final, last great day, all of the churches, all of the camps, feast sites, that is, all over the United States and all over Canada, and then the first day to England also and Hawaii, and last Sunday, or last Sabbath, I should say, not Sunday, a week ago today, I spoke from Jerusalem to the church in Pasadena. It was night in Jerusalem, but I spoke to the morning church in Pasadena, and there they recorded what I said, and it was replayed again for the afternoon service in the auditorium in Pasadena. Now, 2 weeks ago, we had a great meeting of the brethren in London. I think there were brethren only from around the London area. I don't think the brethren came down from up in northern England or Scotland or North Ireland, but there were a few who came over from Germany and other countries on the continent of Europe, and we had more than 1,000, and I thought they had gotten the message that I gave on the last great day of the feast. I found out they had not. And the ministers there asked me to give them that same message, and so I gave that to them 2 weeks ago today. And we had a wonderful meeting there in London, over 1,000 of our people. I don't know how many of you are out in New York, but I would guess that there must be 1,000 or more of you there listening right now. Now, the following Monday night, after speaking in London, I spoke, and that was just the following Monday from the Sabbath, the day after tomorrow, you might say. I spoke to a very large banquet in Cairo. I spoke for a half hour or longer, and there were about 300 or more there. It was a large banquet, many, many tables with about 8 or 9 or 10 seated at each round table, and many of the tables filling a great grand ballroom. And they were the top people of Egypt. And I spoke quite a while to them. Then at Jerusalem last Monday, I had a good private meeting with Prime Minister Begin. I was accompanied, of course, as I always am, by Mr. Rader, and also the mayor of Jerusalem, Teddy Kollek, mayor of Jerusalem. And by the way, he had been speaking on the national network, the ABC network, from New York just about 10 days before. But he was back in Jerusalem, and he went along with us to the prime minister, in the prime minister's office. And incidentally, Prime Minister Begin was in a very important meeting in Tel Aviv. Now, it's a one-hour automobile drive from Tel Aviv on up to Jerusalem. Jerusalem, you know, is up higher. It's about 2,250 feet elevation, whereas Haifa's right down on the seashore. And the prime minister left his meeting with several important people in Tel Aviv. He drove an hour to come to Jerusalem to have the personal meeting with me, and then another hour's drive back, and for that 2.5 hours or a little more, he just left his people of his important meeting in Tel Aviv just waiting for him. And I mentioned how sorry I was that he had to come and all of that thing and come out of the meeting and come all that distance to get to see and talk to me. He said, "Mr. Armstrong, I would get up in the middle of the night to talk to you." Well, that sort of warmed my heart a little bit, too. Now I'm to have a meeting next Tuesday with President Sadat of Israel. Now, I know you've all, of course, read a great deal about how President Carter got Mr. Begin of Israel and the Prime Minister and President Sadat of Egypt together at the White House and up at the Camp David, and got them together and had them photographed together with him and all of that. Well, I'm not going to get to have them photographed together with me because Mr. Sadat will be in Cairo while Mr. Begin is in Jerusalem. But I tell you what I am going to do. And I already have the permission of President Sadat for it, and I told this to Mr. Begin, and he was glad to have me do it. He says, that will be fine. I'm going to give them a cover story on the plain truth, and I don't know whether it'll be possibly the February number. I don't know just which number. It could be March, but I think probably February. I will have the two of them pictured on the front cover of the plain truth. And then I'm going to write quite an article and about my meetings with them and about the whole situation in the Middle East. Now, that is the boiling pot of the whole world right now. That's where the trouble spot is. Not anywhere else. It is there. And I know the world has been looking on the United States the last few days because just, what was it, 3 days ago, 4 days ago, we had the election. And incidentally, I'd like to say a few things about that. Now, the governments of this world are all the ideas of human men. What Adam and Eve did in the Garden of Eden, they took to themselves from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Instead of letting God give them the knowledge of what is good and what is evil and tell them what is sin and what is righteousness, they said they would decide for themselves. They would manufacture the knowledge in their own minds of what they thought was good and what they think is evil. So, their children are the world. You look at the whole world today, 4 billion people and more. And, you see, last December I was speaking to the top leaders of 1/4 of all of those people in China. And one of the vice chairmen in China, there are 2 vice chairmen and a chairman who run the government in China. And I was speaking to one of the 2 vice chairmen, and they are molding the thought, the thinking, the believing of 1/4 of all of the people on earth, 1 billion people. That is a lot of people. God has opened doors for me to see more heads of government, more presidents, more chairmen, prime ministers, more kings than any other man in the world. Nobody else except Mr. Rader, who always goes with me, has ever seen as many. I have seen them in South America. I've seen them all over Europe. I've seen them in South Africa, in West Africa, in East Africa, in North Africa. I have seen them in the Middle East. And I know the Arab leaders. I know King Hussein. I know President Sadat. I know the president, or who was the president, but he still really acts as president, though he officially resigned of Lebanon. And spent a day with him in his mountain home up in the mountains. And that's before the great trouble in Beirut. And Beirut has been practically destroyed by all that trouble that has happened since. But I did have quite a whole day's visit with the president there. And with those in Asia, with the emperor of Japan, with the head people of China, with the top people in Korea, and with the president of South Vietnam before he had to move out and the communists took over. And so it goes. Now, just day before yesterday, Mr. Rader and I had luncheon once again with King Leopold III of Belgium. He's a very dear friend of mine. He's been a guest in my home out in Pasadena, and I had not seen him now in almost 4 years. And it was nice to see him and his wife in their home at the chateau. And incidentally, they are living at or just adjacent to Waterloo. Now, Waterloo is where Napoleon had his final defeat. They call it his Waterloo, as they say. Well, that's where Napoleon was finally destroyed and the government that he had had of the so-called Holy Roman Empire. Now, that's what we're expecting next over here in Europe, is that there will be a union of 10 nations going together in Europe, and the Pope at Rome will sit on top of the whole heap. There will be one man over all of the governments. There will be a king, or I don't know what they may call him, a president, a prime minister, whatever term they give him, I don't know, over each one of the 10 nations. Now, I did think... Let me just say, I did think that Belgium and Sweden and Norway and countries like that would be in it. And I have sort of changed my mind a little bit. You see, the Bible doesn't tell us just which nations. The Bible only tells us there will be 10. And it doesn't tell us which, and so I can't know. But now I'm beginning to think that the Polish Pope may bring Poland in. And they're having labor trouble right now. It's in this morning's newspapers right over here in Paris. There's going to be another labor trouble in Poland. And as you know, that Romania is not really very enthusiastically with the Soviet, and neither is Yugoslavia. And I can begin to see some of those nations breaking loose from the Russian orbit and going in. And instead of the Scandinavian nations, they will go in with France and Germany and with Spain and Portugal and Italy and form the 10 nations with the Roman... And that will be the same territory that was occupied by the old Roman Empire. That is coming along. Now I have, as I said, a meeting scheduled in Cairo on next Tuesday with President Sadat. And incidentally, our whole television crew are over here, and they will be on Monday getting in, getting their cameras all set up and everything for this, as they did, and we were completely photographed in the meeting with Prime Minister Begin of Israel. And I am doing what I can to help bring about peace between these nations, but I tell you, brethren, there is not going to be any peace until Christ comes and gives us all peace in the government of God. The governments of the world today are on a competitive basis. Everybody is living in a competitive manner, one person against another. In sports, it's all competition. In politics, it's all competition. Brethren, let me tell you something. You may not realize this. I have said it before, but maybe you didn't quite get it. Do you know who first started this idea of taking polls of public opinion? You know who started it, who the real starter, the founder of that was? It was myself. I did it back in the year of 1915, and that's before a great many of you were born. And I did it for a national magazine. And I can show you yet copies of that national magazine publishing that report of merchandising and retail conditions in the little town of Richmond, Kentucky. Then I made another survey up in Lansing, Michigan. And after that, I made surveys in other cities. And I started this thing of making surveys of public opinion. And let me tell you, I have known all along, and I was writing newspaper editorials on a newspaper back in 1933... In 1932. And I was showing that the polls were not predicting who would win the election that year, and they didn't. You remember that was the year that FDR, Franklin Roosevelt, was running against Hoover. And the polls said it was about even. And I knew it was not going to be even, because I'd said the polls are not accurate. You know why? They don't know how to do it. They don't get information from a large enough percentage of all the people. And they don't get information from the right percentage of each block. For example, in the vote, we have the Catholic vote, the Jewish vote, and the Protestant vote. We have the black vote, the white vote, the capital vote, and the management vote, the labor vote. We have this vote and that vote. Well, you've got to know what percentage of the people are in each group and how they go. And they don't do that. They just take a few here and there. And they don't know how to take a poll. But I did start all this poll business, regardless, myself, and I know something about it. Well, I won't take time because I know there is going to be a sermon, and Dr. McCarthy is there, I understand, today, and I don't want to take up his time. So I'm going to stop right here. I'm sure you all know, I must say a little something. The state of California has dropped the lawsuit against God's Church. I'm sure you all know that. And there will be something about it, of course, in the Plain Truth and in the worldwide news. And I just sent something in that I just finished writing since I've been here in Paris, and where we're just stopping off so that we can go up and see King Leopold and have lunch with him. And then we're on our way tomorrow back to Cairo, Egypt, for the meeting with President Sadat. Now, I'll get to you in New York when I can, but the governments in this world are all influenced on the idea of get. Now, every vote group, I mentioned all these groups in the vote, every group wants to get what is right for them to get for their interest. They don't care what happens to anyone else. What about the politicians? Well, they want to get the vote. They just want to get the power. And that's what it was in the lawsuit against the church. There was the Attorney General of California. He wants to be the governor. He wants more power. He's going to run for governor next time. Well, his lawsuit against us didn't advance him like he thought it would. It hurt him. Anyhow, we did have a little something to do without playing any politics. We had a little something to do with the California legislature making void the law on which the Attorney General based his whole lawsuit. He was going to take over our church, and if we went, every other church would have been taken over by the governor or by the government of California. But now he doesn't have a leg to stand on, so he dropped the lawsuit, and we have won a great victory there. But always there's the ecstasy of winning, the agony of losing. President Carter and his wife Rosalind went into a room, and in agony they burst out in tears and they just cried aloud. It was so hard. And of course Mr. Reagan is all up in ecstasy. And I had to think, 4 years ago Mr. Carter and his wife Rosalind were in ecstasy, and President Ford and his wife were in agony. And they were probably crying tears because they lost. Now, did that spoil the ecstasy of President Carter? No, I don't think it did. He was so happy that he won, he didn't care if it did hurt them, or is that true now? I know that's a pretty strong statement, but just think about that a minute. That is the way Satan has got into all of us. He's got it into our minds. We don't care what happens to the other fellow. The average person says, well, I don't feel that if he suffers, that isn't making me suffer. I'm not suffering. What do I care if the other guy suffers? Brethren, in the kingdom of God, we're going to care if the other man suffers, and we're going to try to keep the other man from suffering. We're going to try to have all of us enjoy the ecstasy and nobody having to enjoy the agony. You know, our troubles in this world are all spiritual, and people don't know that, and they can't think spiritually because they don't have a spiritual mind. And you can't have a spiritual mind without the Holy Spirit of God, and the people in the world don't have that. So until Christ comes, and until he sets up the government of God, and incidentally, the only place in the world where for hundreds and hundreds of years where the government of God has been effective is in our church right now. And the government of man was trying to destroy that government. God didn't let them destroy it, and we have won that great victory. God is still on his throne, and don't you ever forget it. Well, brethren, I'll come and see you when I can. I can't tell you when that'll be. I don't know whether it'll be next month or next year or longer. I need to go so many places. I need to see so many of our brethren in churches. I'll get to you when I can. I do think of you. I pray for you daily, brethren. I think of you a lot, and I need your prayers. So I'm going to turn everything over now. I'm taking some of Dr. McCarthy's time, and I mustn't take any more. Thanks for letting me talk to you from Paris, France. It's afternoon here. It'll soon be dark, and the day is almost spent over here. The Sabbath day is gone. We're still going to have another little Bible study before sunset. And so you go ahead and have your service there. So bye-bye, everybody. God bless you all. Okay, now we're having a little Bible study in the Sabbath over here in our apartment in the Plaza Athenae Hotel in Paris, France. Yesterday it happened that I had mentioned something about the governments of the world and about the way governments were 2,000 years to 2,500 years ago and on to now. And I would like to go into some of the prophecies along that line. Since this is being recorded and many people are going to hear it, I think I have not gone into a subject of this kind for a long time now, and I think it might be quite interesting. First, let me preface it this way by saying this. Before all things else, where did everything come from? Here we are, people, and we're only here for a little while. We have to eat food and drink water to keep going, to give us fuel, to give us energy to live and work with. We have to have a heart in each one of us to pump blood all through our system. We have to have lungs to breathe air, and the blood goes through the lungs on the way back to the heart. We have many systems in the body that have to keep going to keep us alive. So there's the circulatory system of blood. There is the digestive system that digests our food. The eliminative system. Some of it has to be eliminated that isn't burned up and used in energy and in work. And the many marvelous things in the human body. And then there is the human mind. But what happened? This didn't just happen. It had to be designed, it had to be planned, and someone had to think it out, and someone had to produce it. Now, before all else, you read in 1 John, or not 1 John, but the book of John, in the New Testament, where we have Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, which are really the biographies of the life of Jesus Christ. And the beginning of John, which originally was really the first book in the New Testament, now we have it the fourth, but it says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was also God. Now, Word is translated from the Greek word in which it originally was written by John. It was written in the Greek language, and it means just what it says, Word, or it means a spokesman, the one who speaks. But he was God, but he also was with God. Now, there are two personages, and they both are God. But the one is the head of the other. And the one that was the Word, we read in the 14th verse of that same chapter, was made flesh, in other words, born as a human being and dwelt among us. And he was born as Jesus Christ about 1970 or 80 years ago, or 90 years ago. He became Jesus Christ. Now, Jesus Christ had been God. They had always existed. Your mind can't conceive that. It's impossible for you to really believe that. I can't believe it. But I know it. Someone had to always live. And God had great supreme superior mind. He could think. He could plan. And they had to think and plan. And you know, they might have been thinking and planning for thousands. It might have been millions of years before they decided on what to create and what to make and what to produce. The first thing they created were angels. Now, God is a spirit. Christ was then with God, and he was a spirit. He hadn't been born as a human being yet. They were composed of spirit. They didn't have a heart pumping blood. They didn't have to eat food for fuel. They had always existed, and they had self-containing life. But they had to think, and they had to think out what they wanted to create and design and plan it and design it. They created angels. They set angels on the earth when they created the earth instead of man. That's long before man was created. And so they set angels here. Now, there's one thing God could not create, and that was character in those angels. And their creation was not complete until they had formed a character one way or the other. Now, either they had to form a character that is holy, righteous, perfect, without anything wrong in it whatsoever, and a spiritual character or a wrong character. God could give them mind, and he did. But he could not, if he had made them so they had to be right and have a right character, it would be just like man making a machine. It has to do what the man makes it do. It can't think. And in order to have personality, in order to have character, in order to be personal beings, God had to make them with minds that could think and that could plan and that could make decisions. And they had to decide. If they were to have the good character that God had, and God had the perfect character, always deciding and doing the right thing, then they had to decide that for themselves. God put them on earth. Now, he put angels on earth. And apparently put a third of all the angels on earth with them. And the angels had to develop character. Now, to do that, God, to govern their lives so they would live the right way and so they would have peace instead of always having conflict, they would have harmony instead of disharmony and war. They would build up instead of trying to tear down and destroy. God gave them a way of life, and he made that way of life a foundational law. He gave them a government. Now, you cannot have a government without a basic foundational law or a constitution on which your government is based. In the United States, we have the Constitution of the United States. We have one for every state in the Union. There is a basic law for every city, for every county, for every state, for every nation. The basic law of the government of God is simply the way of life that is summed up in the one word love, but it is outflowing love, not incoming love, because then incoming love is lust. And I don't like to use the word love because people today call illicit sex love, and that's not love at all. That is lust. But it's outflowing. So I use the word give to show it's out from yourself. And the transgression of that way, or the wrong way then, is get. And I use the word get and give. That makes it simple. People can understand. And as I speak to people in foreign nations, and before crowds of people in foreign nations, I use the terms give and get. And they can understand that. So God's basic law and the basic law of the government he put over those angels was love, outflowing love, or give for everybody. It's the way of cooperation, not competition. It's the way of serving, not being served. It is the way of sharing, not taking away from other people. The way of helping, not hurting other people. The way of building up and building together with other people instead of destroying and tearing down. Well, so God set the angels on earth, and he set this Lucifer on the throne of the whole earth. And Lucifer was set here to administer that government of God and administer that basic constitution or way of life, which is give. But Lucifer rebelled. Lucifer said, I think God is wrong. I think that competition is better. I think, look at the ecstasy you get from winning, from competition. Now, I've just been talking about the ecstasy that Mr. Reagan just had here. What was it, 3 or 4 days ago, on the great landslide victory when he won. But there was the agony that poor President Carter had to suffer. And President Carter and his wife, Rosalynn, went into a room alone, closed the door, and others could hear them just crying aloud in agony. But you know, I had to think. 4 years ago, President Carter was in ecstasy because he won, and Gerald Ford and his wife were in agony because they lost 4 years before. Do you think that hurt Mr. Carter's ecstasy? No, he was enjoying the win, and he didn't care. The fact that the Fords were suffering didn't hurt Mr. Carter, did it? Well, I wrote something about that earlier today, and I said, I wish that Mr. Carter might be able to read what I just wrote. Because he would say, it's no skin off my nose. It didn't hurt me that the other guy suffered. But now, maybe it's not hurting Mr. Reagan any that Mr. Carter is suffering. In our way of life is the way that super archangel Lucifer that God put on the throne, he rebelled and wanted the get way. He says, I'd rather take and have. It isn't going to hurt me if the other guy suffers. What do I care if he suffers? I want to have everything for myself. So, he became Satan the devil. But he's still today sitting on that throne. Now, Satan, he was the former cherub Lucifer. He is an immortal spirit being. He's not a human being like we are. He doesn't have a heart. He doesn't have to eat food. He has self-containing life, and he still lives, even today. He was living when Adam was put on the earth 6,000 years ago. He's living yet today. So then God created man on the earth. Well, the earth had become rather devastated, and God in 6 days renewed the surface of the earth, as you read in the 104th Psalm and verse 30. But he prepared it for man, and then God created man. And the first man, Adam, was given a chance to restore the government of God to the earth. But to do that, he had to reject the way that Lucifer had gone and the angels. He had to go the way of God's character, the way of love. But he let his wife Eve be deceived by Satan. And Adam went right along, and Eve grabbed him by the nose and says, you come along here with me, husband. We're going to take to ourselves the knowledge of what is right and what is wrong. So they took of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil in the Garden of Eden. They rejected God. They rejected the way of God. They rejected the government of God. Now, let me tell you why that's so important. The only place on earth today where the government of God has been restored, like God put it originally, is in the Church of God, the worldwide Church of God. And this whole thing of the state of California and its lawsuit was an effort by the governments of Satan to destroy the government of God. That's what it was all about. I'm nothing. I'm a nobody. But God did call me, and Christ has been using me and opened my mind to see this and to start the church based on a government and based on that law of give instead of get, and to teach that way. And that's what we're trying to do and trying to live. Satan is the one who is ruling. Now, Adam was the progenitor of the whole human race. He had children, they had children, their children had children, and the whole world has come from Adam and Eve. Adam and Eve made the decision for this whole world. And they made the decision to reject the government of God and the way of God, and to go the way of Satan. So look at our sports and athletics. One team wins, the other team has agony. The one has ecstasy and the other has the agony. Everything is competition and strife, trying to hurt one another in this world. It's a wrong way to live. But the world is living that way. That lawsuit against the church was merely Satan using one of the governments. You see, God said to Adam, you have made a decision for all of your children, and all of your children will be the whole world, as it'll be when there are 4 billion people on earth. And you have made the decision. All God did was make what Adam had decided binding. Adam made the decision, not God. Adam cut all of his children off from God. They're cut off from God. They can't reach God. They can't know God. They don't know about God. And Jesus Christ said, no man can come to me except the Father draws him. God the Father who sent Christ. The world is cut off from God. Now then, God said, you go and form your own governments. I won't go into the rest of it. They were to form their own kind of society and their sports and everything else. But we're going to talk about government for a little while now. He said, go form your own governments. Satan had been the one who was to administer the government of God, and he had put a different kind of government on, and Satan didn't want God's government on the earth. Adam had turned to Satan and Satan's way, and Adam's children were going to be led by Satan, and they were cut off from God, but they weren't cut off from Satan. Oh, no. So men formed the governments on the earth. Now we come along to about the year of 604 B.C., 604 years before Christ. And I want to read you a little now from the book of Daniel. In the very first of Daniel, beginning the first chapter and the first verse, in the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, now he was the king of Judah, and they were still living in Judea, and the king Jehoiakim was reigning in Jerusalem, where we just were about 4 or 5 days ago. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, who was the king of Judah, came Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon. Now Nebuchadnezzar had now raised up and organized the first world empire, the greatest government that had ever existed since Adam was created on earth. And he came to Jerusalem and besieged it in war. Now he conquered it, and he took the Jews slaves to Babylon. The Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into Nebuchadnezzar's hand, with part of the vessels of the house of God, which he'd carried, and so on. Now then, and the king spake unto Ashpenaz, the master of his eunuchs, that he should bring certain of the children of Israel, of the king's seed, and of the princes, children in whom was no blemish, but well favored, and skillful in all wisdom and cunning in knowledge, and understanding, science, such as had ability in them to stand in the king's palace, and whom they might teach the learning and the tongue of the Chaldeans. In other words, those Jews were just a little bit smarter in their minds than the other people, and the king of Babylon knew it. And he said, pick out the most brilliant young Jewish people and bring them over here, and we can use them in our government. So he took four. There was Daniel and his three friends. I just wanted to show you a little bit there. Now, farther in the first chapter, we read this, beginning with verse 17. As for those four children now that were selected, it was Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, his three friends. As for these four children, or while they were grown men, they were about like the two young men we have right here in the room with us, Kevin and Aaron Dean, who are both married and have children, but they're still young men. As for these four children, God gave them knowledge and skill in all learning and wisdom. And Daniel had understanding in visions and dreams. Now get that. Daniel had been given understanding in visions and dreams. Now then we come to the second chapter. And I just want to give you a little of it here, and we'll get through it as fast as we can. In the second year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, now Nebuchadnezzar is the big pagan king up in Babylon, over in pagan Babylon, where their religion was the Babylonian mystery religion. Nebuchadnezzar dreamed dreams, whereon his spirit was troubled, and his sleep brake from him. Then the king commanded to call the magicians, the astrologers and the sorcerers, the Chaldeans, to show the king his dream. So they came, and the king said to them, I have dreamed a dream, and my spirit was troubled to know the dream. And then spake the Chaldeans to the king, said, O king, live forever. Tell your servants the dream, and we'll show you what it means. We'll tell you the interpretation. The king answered, and he was just a little too smart for them. He's going to try them, and he's going to put them to the test. The king answered and said to the Chaldeans, well, the thing is gone from me. I don't remember my dream. I don't remember what it was. If you will not make known unto me the dream with the interpretation of it, you shall be cut in pieces, and your houses shall be made a dunghill. But if you show me the dream and the interpretation thereof, you shall receive of me gifts and rewards and great honor. Therefore, show me, tell me what I dreamed. And when you tell me, it'll come back to me. Well, they answered again and said, well, let the king tell his servants the dream, and we will show you the interpretation. But the king answered and said, I know of a certainty that you would gain the time, because the thing is gone from me. But if you will not make known to me the dream, there is but one decree for you, for ye have prepared lying and corrupt words to speak before me. So he was going to put them to death, in other words. I won't read the rest of that right there. But they told him that there is no one but the gods that can show you what you dreamed of. We're only human. We can't do that. Well, anyway, they were going to be put to death, and then it finally was discovered that God had given Daniel skill to know dreams, and Daniel was brought before the king. And these other astrologers and fortune tellers, they wanted Daniel to do it because it would save their lives for them. Daniel was brought to the king, and Daniel answered in the presence of the king and said, I'm over in verse 27 now, and said to the king, the secret which the king has demanded cannot the wise men, the astrologers, the magicians, the soothsayers say to the king. But Daniel said, there is a God in heaven that reveals secrets and that will make known to the king Nebuchadnezzar what shall be in the latter days. Now he's talking about something that's going to happen in your lifetime and mine, right down here in the end of this 20th century.